Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you today?
Kia ora. I'm very good, thank you.
Lots has been happening internationally. Let's start with Brazil. A very exciting election result over there. Give us a picture. What's happened? We've got Lula back in power. Has Bolsonaro conceded yet? What's actually going on?
Well, this is really exciting, I suppose, in the sense that it didn't look like this would be the result because Bolsonaro was really making a comeback at the first round. So Lula's win was really close, you know, like less than 1%, just over 50.9 to 49.1. Bolsonaro hasn't conceded officially, but one of his spokespersons has said that he will begin the transition of power. So that means Lula will take over on the 1st of January 23. I think what we have to remember here is that he's going to be facing a hostile Congress because Bolsonaro still won a lot of, his parties and his supporters have won a lot of seats in the Congress. So some real challenges ahead. But, you know, really a good reminder to see globally that even though we hear a lot about the radical right parties always being on the rise, that this highly populist country, you know, has swung left in a really big way.
Pretty amazing to see some of the stuff online from social media of people celebrating and just like the mass of people out there. It is quite quite an incredible thing to be able to see. What was Lula's main things he was running on? What does he actually represent as a leader?
Well, when he was elected more than 20 years ago, he was the first working class Brazilian to ever become president, and he cares a lot about poverty. So he's got a massive plan that hasn't been costed yet on how to reduce poverty across the country, but particularly in more remote areas. He's very keen to stop deforestation. So deforestation of the Amazon had just, under Bolsonaro, had gone crazy in terms of rates, and supporting agribusinesses just to clear land and to undermine indigenous communities and environmental groups. So he's looking at stalling deforestation and supporting indigenous communities and also LGBTQI communities because they faced a lot of oppression under Bolsonaro as well. So a really big agenda, to be honest, but he seems pretty committed.
Well, it'll be very exciting to see what happens next. Let's bring it back to Aotearoa. We've seen some of the new mayors across the Motu, take umbrage, perhaps in their new roles with the Three Waters plan, specifically Wayne Brown, Auckland's new mayor, and Christchurch's Phil Morga. They've announced a plan that is, I guess, an alternative to Three Waters. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, at the moment, it's a two-page proposal, and so it outlines sort of four or five key points that they want to see changed. But if we had to boil it down to an essence, I suppose, is that what the new reforms do is centralise the 67 entities that we have around the country that look after water into four, and it sort of, even though they remain in public hands and community hands, local government has less sort of control, I suppose, than what it does now in terms of ownership. And also the new Three Waters is about co-governance with iwi. So what they don't want is they don't want the four big entities, the two plus one mayors, and they want co-governance to be decided locally. And they're talking mana whenua rather than, you know, so they're saying, well, we'll work with, but we don't see the obligation in law, if you like, for co-governance. So there are some other things that are interesting in terms of vulnerable areas getting access to special funds and so on. But there is a degree of, you know, populist, you know, reflecting sort of the anxiety that some communities have about these reforms, but they don't disagree that we need reform. It's more ameliorating the centralised elements of these reforms.
Now, co-governance as a concept is sort of cropping up again and again as something that I guess you could say centre-right and perhaps more conservative politicians and parties are taking issue with in many different political aspects at the moment. Are you seeing this as something that we might have more heated conversation about leading into our general election next year?
Yes, I think it's going to be a fruitful wedge issue for those on the centre-right. We've seen this kind of politics before, but we shouldn't assume that all on the centre-right are anti-co-governance, mm-hmm. because we know that under the previous national government, there have been co-governance management arrangements, you know, put in place over rivers and other such things. So Chris Finlayson, you know, oversaw some of that work. Mm. And so I think there's a degree of misunderstanding, if you like, about what co-governance is. It's not passing over ownership. It's sharing in partnership the management, you know, and the future directions of our resources in a way that respects kaitiakitangi. So, you know, really, It's a useful populist discourse issue, and unfortunate, really, given where we're moving with Te Tiriti.
Absolutely. Last thing to have a bit of a chat about this morning has been quite an interesting thing to come out of our local government elections. This is a bit of a conversation around diversity and political representation. That Fesso Collins' team has done quite a bit of research into how their campaign was successful and unsuccessful in ways, and his ethnicity has been something that they've discovered has been a major hurdle for him to overcome in terms of gathering support. What more do you know about this? What can you sort of see this showing us about perhaps bigger patterns of the voting public in Aotearoa?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one. So I was on a panel with Fesso Collins a couple of days ago at the Counterterrorism Violent Extremism Hui, and he commented during his talk that during his mayoral campaign, he'd received feedback from research about the key challenges he faced as a candidate. And the primary one was the colour of his skin. And estimates, he was told, were that it could cost him up to 20,000 votes. And so, you know, unsurprisingly, the room kind of went, because it's like that. And he mentioned it. He said, that's something I can't change. Mm. And so what's this about? And, you know, this week, we've also seen the National Party start managing their selection processes for new seats, you know, like the seats that need to be filled in time for 2023, but also for the Hamilton West by-election. And what we've seen in Hamilton West is the shortlist is a Māori man, two women, one of whom Pacific. And in New Plymouth, the candidate for 2023 is David McLeod, and he's Ngāti Mutunga, Ngāi Tahu, and Ngāti Kroll. So then, of course, this is prompting some in the media to call it a white man ban, which is reflective of Labor's proposal in 2013 that got labelled a man ban because they were going to do women-only shortlists and safe seats. But, you know, what we're seeing now is National is responding to this diversity challenge, if you like, and I think that's just really important. I think what Fesso told us a couple of days ago reminds mm-hmm. us that it's really important for political parties to be representative, not just in terms of, like, in thinking about it as a symbolic, but in terms of making sure that there are people from many communities, including our Māori and Pacific communities, around the table.
Mm, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. It's always great to have a chat. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Kia ora, thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Thank you very much.